Well, hello, Patriots, Freedom Fighters, throughout Saskatchewan, across the country, and around the world. How are we all doing tonight? Share it out, guys, share it out. Bust through this shadow banning that we're experiencing on Facebook. We're streaming to Facebook. Mark Friesen, Canada First, Mark Friesen, Saskatoon Grasswood, Forum for Canadian Sovereignty, YouTube, Twitter, Rumble, and DLive. Hello, DLive. Good to see you, folks. And Rumble, good to see you, folks. Rumble's been doing quite well here lately, which is a good sign. Hello, Denise from Northern Alberta. Hello, Marilyn from Ottawa Valley. My condolences. Stony Plain, Alberta, Debbie. Good to see you. Diana Morris, thank you. Ruby, good evening. Tom, good to see you. Oh, Jeremy McKenzie's channel disappeared 30 minutes ago. That I'm not surprised at. Mine won't last much longer either, I don't think. Nice to see you, Teresa. Good to see you, Murray. Holiday's still going great, is it? You're still out there, are you? Good for you. I'm jealous. Very jealous. I can't afford to pay attention right now, so we don't go anywhere in the winter. Winters are our down months. It really sucks being a seasonal business. Although it looks like I have something lined up for next winter, so that's good. Hello, TS from Calgary. So, what happened today? No surprise, that's for sure. The commission report was dropped around noon for anybody outside the mainstream media. And of course, we got exactly what we expected. I'm Some people make me chuckle a little bit because they were a little bit shocked, a little surprised. I don't understand how anybody could be surprised. The Liberal government literally appointed a family member to be the judge in this commission. The corruption with this Liberal government runs very deep. And that's a sign of a globalist leader. That's a sign of a globalist party. Corruption as thick and as deep as it is. So I, you know, again, my message to the convoy people, we don't need the government to justify what we did. What we did and what you did was 100% righteous. And how you went about opposing this government is clearly within the Charter of Rights and Freedoms that this corrupt government and its commissioner that was appointed clearly ignore by design. And it is by design, and we're going to talk about our Constitution and our Charter of Rights and Freedoms and how much of a joke it really is and how it doesn't represent the people. It isn't a constitution for the people. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say we the people. This is a constitution that is supposed to rein in government. But that's only providing that the government in and of itself isn't corrupt and hasn't appointed all the judges and hasn't appointed all the senators. This whole joke of a constitution is just that. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. My guest tonight, of course, it's Friday night, is my good friend Salim Mansour. And Salim joins us now. Hello, Salim.
Hello, good evening, Mark.
How are you?
I'm good. I was listening to your discussion and of the judgment, I believe it's the word, if that's the correct word, that came down today from the commission into the Emergencies Act, that the government was justified in doing whatever it did.
Yes, of course.
So there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, we are in effect what so many of us have been talking about for quite some time. We're not a republic. We are a constitutional monarchy, but we are a banana constitutional monarchy. But we don't grow banana. We're not a tropical country, so I don't know what we're going to say.
Right. It's still a banana republic, though.
No, we are not a republic. You know, we still have we are a constitutional monarchy.
Right.
And now,
so a banana monarchy then.
Yeah, banana monarchy, because we're going to have Charles III. We have him as the king, and he will be officially anointed this May. So, yeah, it is not surprising at all, but it is distressing because here we are in the 21st century, 157 years after the 1867 Act was granted to us as a dominion. And here we are 157 years later, not one step more advanced than what we were in 1867. And the illusion that we have been living under as a people, that we are a constitutional democracy, where we have our rights that is fully protected by our constitution, so, is something that has been missing all the while.
So let me ask you this then, Salim. You know, I'm a fairly big fan of Brian Peckford. I like his courage. I like the fact that he's, you know, denouncing this government and their actions in regards to what happened with the convoy and just in general the last 3 years. Being one of the architects of, you know, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So do you think that Brian Peckford takes the view that the Constitution that he helped create and he still promotes as a good thing is 100% dependent on the government of the day not being corrupt? Because it seems to me, Salim, that this Constitution, this Charter of Rights and Freedoms, is very open to being manipulated, to being abused by governments like the Trudeau government that is very corrupt. So it seems to me that it's not really worth the paper it's written on if somebody like Trudeau can come in and abuse it the way he has.
I don't want to get into, on a personal level, so I'm not evading your question. I just want to preface that I don't want to get into any debate with Brian Peckford. I respect him as much as you do, especially he demonstrated as the only living member of that premier-elect group, the first ministers, the only one alive of the 11, who came out last year in February in Ottawa during the Freedom Convoy while it was there. And he spoke and he stood there with the Freedom Convoy. And subsequently, he has been speaking out about, as again, the only living member who was there, about the Charter of Rights, about the Constitution Act of 1982, and basically saying, I have his speech in my hand, the one that he gave in Ottawa on February the 13th, the day before the Emergency Act was invoked by the Prime Minister and the Parliament. And in that speech he gave, it is a very interesting and very remarkable speech, and now it is a historic document. And if any one of us, or people, Canadian, who engages in writing about the events of last year, and I will get back into it in a moment, and then looking forward where we are 1 year later and then going forward of the situation, then I think Brian Peckford's speech will be part of the discussion and part of the debate, because yeah. It is his speech, his words, his thoughts, and so on. So, as I said, I hesitate to get into it, but if I were physically proximate to him in the sense that we were at a table and we got into talking about this, which we need to, I would be on the opposite side of Brian Peckford. And I would be on the opposite side, not simply on the matter of how you look at this charter, which is what he was doing last year in his speech. And as one of the person who claims, he claims, by the way, he claims, it is his word, and I'll read it out, that he was responsible for drafting the amending formula and then the Charter of Rights and Freedom. It was his version that was adapted and accepted by the 10 other first ministers, which includes the Prime Minister, of course. So it is a very important point. He is the author. That's what he claims, not you and I.
Right.
He says, and let me read to you. He says in his speech, in one paragraph, he says, just down the road here, in the Chateau Laurier, in 1981, I made a proposal to the provinces for a Charter of Rights and Freedom and a Patriation Act. It was the one that was ratified the next day to become the Constitution Act of 1982, in which your rights as individual Canadians were protected. There you have it. He is making the assertion, and there is no qualification. He's making an assertion that he was the person, of the one person among the 11, because there was a deadlock. And we can go into that history, not necessarily today, but as we carry on forward, there was a deadlock. This is the November conference, November 1981. There had been three other meetings before that, and there was a deadlock. And it was there in November 1981, what is called in the kitchen. They withdrew to a kitchen in Chateau Laurier. And he was there in the company of Jean Chrétien, who was the justice minister, federal government, responsible for carrying this proposal through. That is what the meeting was taking place and what the meeting would agree upon and then carry it through. There was Roy Romano, the Attorney General of Saskatchewan. Then there was Roy McMurtry, the Attorney General of Ontario, and Brian Peckford. So there were those four people. And late into the night and early into the morning, they sat down and worked out the amending formula, and as he says, I made a proposal to the provinces for a Charter of Rights and Freedom and a Patriation Act. And so it is his word, his work, that we are now going to be discussing. And he's saying that what he wrote up and what they agreed upon and they signed on the next day, and then the Prime Minister proceeded to England to bring to patriate the Constitution, that is 1867, and to which was added the Charter of Rights and the amending formula, which then becomes the Constitution of 1982, together what's Patriot. And
Right.
now he's saying 40 years later, exactly almost to the date, 40 years later, that this is not his understanding of what has happened, and this was a violation of Charter of Rights and Freedom, and we will see what it is. But the point is that if he wrote this, and I accept that he wrote this because that's his word, nobody has contradicted it, and nobody has questioned it, then the sad fact is that Mr. Brian Peckford, the last living member of the first ministers from 1982, was snookered by himself, his own education, or by the prime minister and his company. Because what happened is that the document that is in front of us, the Charter of Rights and Freedom that is in front, is one which is
Which is
drafted.
blacker.
There's an
There's an
echo
echo
here.
here.
I
I
don't
don't
know.
know what.
I think it's fine on this end, Salim.
Okay.
I have my headphones in, so
I'm
I'm
getting
getting an
there.
echo.
Okay.
Okay.
Can you hear me? Can you
Can
hear
you
me?
hear me?
Okay.
Okay.
It's bracketed by
section
section
one
1
and
and
section
section 33.
33.
And
And section
section 1
one
and
and section
section
33,
33, in
in
fact,
fact,
basically
turns
section
2
through
to section
7
and
and 15
into
into
not
not our
our
fundamental
fundamental
rights,
rights,
but
but
to
to
the
the
grant
grant
given
given
to
to
us,
us,
the
the
people,
people,
by
by
the
the
government,
government,
that
that
is,
is,
by
by
the
the
government,
government,
by
by
the
the
parliament.
parliament.
And
And
there's
there's
a
a
profound
profound
difference
difference
between
between
the
the
two
two
positions.
positions.
And
And
so
so
Mr.
Mr.
Peckford either
Peckford
does
does
not
not
himself
himself
understand
understand
Salim,
the
Salim,
significance of
what
what he
he
was
was
doing,
doing,
nor
nor did
did he
he
question
question Hang on, Salim.
the
Hang on,
fundamental
Salim.
understanding
Of the
of the
British
British
parliamentary
parliamentary
system
system
upon
upon
which
which
our
our
system
system
is
is
based,
based,
in
in
which
which
there
there
is
is
no
no
reference
reference
to
to the
the
people.
people.
Salim, can you? Oh,
Oh,
you
you
cannot
cannot
hear
hear
me?
me?
No, it's echoing pretty bad from what I understand in the chat.
What
What
were
were
you
you
raising
raising
your
your
fingers?
fingers?
Yeah, I was just trying to tell you that because you weren't hearing me.
Oh,
I
I
wasn't.
wasn't.
He,
He,
I
I
don't
don't
understand.
understand.
There was an echo on your end.
Yeah,
Yeah,
there is
there
an
is an echo.
echo.
I
I
don't know
don't know
why.
why.
There
There
wasn't
wasn't
any
any
echo.
echo.
Are you plugged in now? But
But
it
it
came
came
on
on
the
the
moment
moment
you
you
put
put
something
something
on
on
your
your
screen.
screen.
Is what
what
you
you
have
have
on
on
the
the
screen,
screen,
section
section
1,
one,
reasonable
reasonable
MS,
MS,
does
does
it
it
have
have
a
a
volume?
volume?
No.
So
There's
there's a
no
problem
problem
somewhere.
somewhere. There's nothing related to that.
Okay.
Okay.
Let me undo.
No,
No,
the
the
when
when you
you take
take that
that
out,
out,
there's
there's
no
no
echo.
echo.
Yes, now there's no echo.
I don't know. That's very strange. Because there's no
Something
sound.
kicks in when you project
Okay, let's try this.
your
I just
PowerPoint.
I muted the screen. Let's try that. I think that'll fix it.
Okay. Yeah, it's now better. Now
Yeah.
there's no echo.
Okay, very good.
Okay, so that's my reading of the situation, that Mr. Peckford, given his background, not he's a lawyer by profession, I believe. So he went to the Canadian Law School. He was a student in, I believe, of Memorial University in St. John, Newfoundland, where he did his law. And so what he learned about constitutional law, if he took study of constitutional law, what he learned about it was the British parliamentary system,
Right.
constitutional system. And accordingly, he basically stuck to that education, in which there is no basis of the people. The British system is based upon the sovereignty of the parliament, not the sovereignty of the people. And right. what we have as a right. result is the Canadian people are not sovereign.
Mm.
It's a fundamental misunderstanding.
And so this isn't even just a federal government issue. This is an issue that the provinces also took advantage of. And I live in one where my premier has given instruction to the justice system here in Saskatchewan to continue prosecuting people that were only exercising their rights as guaranteed under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So, for example, there isn't one province, one premier, one government, provincial government in this country that has lived up to their obligations under Section 1, where it is up to them. They are obligated by law that they must demonstrably justify the limits to the Charter of Rights and Freedoms that they put on us. And not one government has been forced to do this. And this makes the whole system crumble in front of us.
Yes, it does. But the point is, it is your expectation now. I mean, what we are talking about, your expectation, and I don't mean your expectation like Mark Friesen. I'm talking about your expectation as Canadian people, is where the problem lies in terms of the expectation and the reality, the existing reality of our constitutional arrangement. Look, what happened is very interesting. When the trucker convoy, when the Freedom Convoy arrived in Ottawa last year, January 28, 29,
right.
The first trucks arrived on January 28, 29, and it built up. And the reception of the people, that is the Canadian people from coast to coast, was, I must be a little guarded over here. The videos and all the pictures that people have seen is one of an immense support that poured out into the streets and overpasses and so on and so forth. The amount of money that was raised so very quickly that I believe within a matter of 24 hours when Tamara Leash joined the GoFundMe, you know, she applied for it and built it up. Within 24 hours or 36 hours, the first $1 million came through. And then within 48 hours or something like that, several more $1 million came through. So it is, again, that is a measure of support that was there, that was coming through, and, right. and people opened their wallets, opened their purses, and sent money. But now I'm reflecting back, and we have to be, you know, more critical and open about it. I don't think there was an overwhelming support from the Canadian people. The Canadian people was divided, and the government saw that.
There's no question there was division. No question.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it was not an overwhelming support. The Canadian people were divided. I think the division was one, again, that reflected the regional reality of Canada, that is the Western provinces, the Prairie provinces, had the greatest support for the Freedom Convoy, starting from the interior of British Columbia, building it up through Alberta and Saskatchewan into Manitoba. And then the division arises. That is, when you come to Central Canada, yes, there was support in Central Canada. People were out there. But I think on balance, maybe it was 60-40, 40% of the people supported and 60% of the people were either quiet, withdrawn, or opposed.
Apathetic. Yeah,
that's right. And the same thing goes across into Quebec and then the Maritimes. Yeah. So the Canadian people were divided, and the government knew about it. All the government knew about it, particularly the governments of Central Canada, Ontario, Quebec, and the Maritimes. In fact, the Maritime Premier, the Premier of New Brunswick, was actually had given instruction, as far as I know, to stop the truckers on the Trans-Canada Highway to block them or to, you know, fine them. There were some measures taken. And I think the same thing applied to Nova Scotia. Newfoundland is an island, you know. I mean, the truckers were not coming from Newfoundland, and neither were they coming from PEI, the Prince Edward Island. So it is Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. So the country was divided, and the premiers knew that, you know, and those who went and those who supported the convoy took for granted. Let me call them the charter people, the trucker and their supporters. The convoy were the charter people. They were people. That is, all of us who support them, the majority were the people who came of age during the 40 years between 1982 and 2022. 40 years is a generation. So right. They were children, or they were not born, or they were young adults when the 1982 patriation took place, right?
I was 11.
Pardon?
I was 11.
You were 11. There you have it. I was going on to my 30th year. You know, I hadn't turned 30 yet, you know. My son was born that year. You know, my son who I lost was born on that year. So this generation, those who supported the truckers, the Freedom Convoy, were enthusiastic about it, seriously believe. And there was no reason not to believe. They saw in front of their eyes what happened and or what they were taught and what they read, that Canada now had a Charter of Rights and Freedom, that is a Bill of Rights. In 1960, when Diefenbaker had put together the Bill of Rights, and the Parliament of Canada adopted it, voted for it and adopted it, it was a statute. It was not a constitutional document. It was a statute. And it only ended up applying to the Canadian Federation, but as a statute, you know.
So can I ask you, Salim, because there's a lot of people out there that claim that we should all be using the Canadian Bill of Rights or the Saskatchewan Bill of Rights or what have you. Can you tell us what the difference is between and what weight the Canadian Bill of Rights carries in a court of law? Can you make that distinction for us so we can understand why some people are saying we need to use the Canadian Bill of Rights or the provincial Bill of Rights in these situations over, you know, the Canadian Charter and the Constitution?
Well, at the simplest term, an act, a statute, is a law passed by the Parliament.
Right.
It is a law that has been voted upon, recorded, and passed by the Parliament. A federal law will go through Ottawa, and the provincial laws will go through the provincial legislature. So it is an individual law. It is a statute when passed. And it only applies in the sense that the government says that this is what we are going to do. And if any one of you break this, then we are going to hold you responsible, you know. But the government itself is not bound to it. Government might be bound to it in the way that the government, having passed the bill, might then, you know, abide by the position taken in that statute, you know. But that statute can be overridden any time by the government by bringing in another statute or making exception to the existing statute by passing some other laws. So it is within the jurisdiction of the government, whereas a constitutional act is beyond the reach of any government. It should be. I mean, that's a theoretical principle. It is a founding document. And so it constrains not only the people or define the people what is their right, that cannot be abridged by any authority. And the government cannot, in that sense, abridge what is written down in the Constitution, unless, well, we're coming to that, you know, unless in terms of our Charter of Rights, it has, yes, of course. But I'm talking about in the generality, in the theoretical sense, you know, the government cannot do that. And if the government in any way act contrary to what is provided in the Constitution, then the government can be held responsible. The individuals in the government can be held responsible.
But the weakness I see in all of this, Salim, is how our system, like, I mean, we just have to look at the Senate is appointed. The judges are appointed. Nobody elects the judges to represent their interests as it relates to the Constitution. They're all appointed by the government that isn't necessarily abiding by the Constitution that they're supposed to be. And they're not forced to by the judges, because the judges are appointed by the same people.
What you have just now raised is contrary to what you are saying is being done within the Constitution. How? Because that's the Constitution of 1867. Mm-hmm. That is the British North America Act. The British North America Act lays down the authority of the federal government, lays down the authority of the provincial government, and enumerates what the government can do, should do, must do. And that is enumerated right through the BNA Act. So the BNA Act, the British North America Act, 1867, which is what was given to Canada to make Canada a dominion, lays down the mechanism of the federation at the federal level and at the provincial level. So the appointment of the judges is in the Constitution of 1867. It stipulates,
right.
You know, I mean, the Constitution of 1867 recognized that Canada has two systems of law. One is what is the common law, that is the British system, based upon common law. And the other one is the Code Napoleon, that is the civil code, which is the French system, and that is in application in Quebec. So the BNA Act 1867 recognizes that. The BNA Act then lays down the provision that the Supreme Court of Canada, to be able to process statutes, laws, and make determination within the 1867 Act of the laws passed by the Parliament, needs to have members in the judiciary at the Supreme Court level who will understand and thereby be able to interpret and execute both the common law system and the civil court system of the Quebec province. And that provision is right there, you know, and it then became formalized that of the 9 justices of the Supreme Court, Quebec will be represented by 3 justices, and the rest of Canada will have 6 justices. So the 3 justices from Quebec will be trained under the civil code of Quebec, the French system, and the 6 justices coming from the rest of Canada will be trained under the common law system and will be, you know, familiar with and be able to direct the common law system. So that is all in that provision. All in the provision is the various treaty obligation, for instance, with the First Nations, you know, and the rights and the obligation that was brought down from the agreements that the Crown, the British Crown, had negotiated with the First Nation, and so on and so forth, you know. So it is all there. And within that system, from 1867 to 1982, we have operated. And while there were problems with that system, that is, among the provinces and the federal government to come to any sort of agreement on some of the fundamental issues that created difficulties, such as the War Measures Act during the First World War, the conscription crisis during the Second World War. We still went along and worked out our differences on the basis that we are not going to change any aspect of the 1867 Act, and we cannot change it because we among ourselves, that is the 11 first ministers, the 10 provinces and the federal government, did not have an agreed upon amending formula for the Constitution of 1867. That's why we left the 1867 Act in England, in the Mother of Parliament, from 1927 till 1982, more than 50 years, because in 1927, what is called the Balfour Declaration, Sir Balfour and the cabinet declared that from now on, all the legislatures of the Dominion would be autonomous and independent to make their own laws. And they would be bound together as a British Commonwealth, members of the British Commonwealth, bound together by the Crown. But the legislatures would be independent and autonomous. So Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Canada, and Ireland, the legislatures, if they wanted, could act on their own. They would become, independent, autonomous, and sovereign bodies. However, in the case of Canada, we said, no, Mother of Parliament, you keep our constitution because we haven't come to any agreement. And that was a struggle that went on from 1927 and more precisely after 1931 when the Statute of Westminster was signed till 1981. And 81, we're talking about Brian Peckford, that November night when they all came to an agreement on the amending formula, that is, 50% of the population in 7 provinces, to amend the constitution. So everything you have said is operating within the 1867 Constitution Act. We agreed with the amending formula in November of 1981, and now the government of Canada, therefore the Prime Minister of Canada, could now go to London and say to the British Parliament, and the British Parliament is ready to hand the BNA Act to Canada, but say to them officially that we have agreed, and now could you, patriate the Constitution, and the British government would then formalize it and which is what they did, and patriated to Canada. And the Queen came, as you know, came in April of 1982 and signed the Canadian Constitution. But here it is, what happened was not that we patriated 1867 Constitution. What we did was we wrote up the Charter of Rights, which was not there in the 1867 Constitution. So this was something that was new, that was written up. And now, as I read to you, Brian Peckford claims that he was part of the writing of the Charter of Rights and Freedom, which was then agreed upon by the first ministers. And that was added to the amending formula for the patriation request. And so what we have is the Constitution of Canada, made up of Constitution Act of 1867 and the Constitution Act of 1982. Okay, so now, unlike what was not there before 1982, what we have now is a Charter of Rights and Freedom that stipulates what the government can do, cannot do in terms of the Charter of Rights and Freedom.
And this is the point that I wanted to raise again with you, Salim, is what good is our Constitution if our government is and our provincial governments within the Federation are able to ignore this this language where they have to demonstrably justify limiting our rights under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, but they completely ignore it. What good is the Constitution, Salim? What good is it?
Well, I mean, what we are coming to is that the 2022 events have now
exposed this.
Exposed the whole thing, right? Until the 2022 event. One of the remarkable thing, again, now looking at back at this debate, and this debate going forward will become a debate as a result of the Freedom Convoy. Otherwise, this debate would not have happened. You and I wouldn't be discussing it. So this is an event now has taken on a both a legal and a historic dimension, you know, and it has to be resolved. The question is how it will be resolved, but it has to be resolved if the Canadian people are going to be satisfied that they have a constitution in which they are a sovereign people. They can only be a sovereign people if their rights are as rights are defined in the American Constitution, inalienable rights.
Yes.
Inalienable rights.
God-given.
God-given. You know, that the technical meaning here is inalienable is it is not something that is a grant.
That government can give you.
Yeah.
It's you. Yours. You're a human.
Right. The ultimate relationship in politics is one of master and slave. I mean, if you break it down, so the historical struggle of master and slave relationship is that ultimately the slave, they win their freedom by defeating the masters or by forcing the masters to recognize that the slaves are equal to the masters. How that the slave possess rights, those are inalienable. They do not come from the master. They do not come from the crown. They do not come from the despot or the tyrant. It is inalienable.
Right.
They possess this right by the very act of being born as a free people.
Yes.
Right? So this is the definitional issue. So people... to be sovereign mean that they have inalienable rights. And now the question...
Which obviously we don't.
Right. So as a result of the 2022...
Obviously our rights aren't guaranteed.
Yeah. So let's put it in the constitutional terms, so, since we're talking about it. As a result of the 2022 convoy, Freedom Convoy, we now see that the Canadian people do not have inalienable rights, and consequently, the Canadian people are not sovereign. So who is sovereign? The sovereignty belongs to the Parliament.
The Parliament.
Right. That is the British system of government. And what I'm now pointing out, that Mr. Peckford, since he's the only one alive on among us, and if he was sitting across from me, or I had the privilege of sitting across from him, I would say, Mr. Peckford, with every due respect that we owe to you and your leadership, I submit that you misunderstood the British parliamentary system, both historically and in its functioning, and you imported that system without the proper qualifications. And we are now saddled with that system in which you thought, Mr. Peckford, you thought, you believe that by writing up the Charter of Rights, you were putting this or giving or reasserting the sovereignty of the Canadian people with inalienable right. But the way you wrote it in the context of the British tradition, you did just the opposite. You spelled out the right, but they are not inalienable, because the way you spelt it out and the First Minister signed the document is you bracketed those rights between Section 1 and Section 33, which gives the Parliament the supremacy to act on how those rights that you have defined from Section 2 through Section 17 to 15, that is the fundamental rights, and then Section 7 to 17, equality rights and mobility rights, and legal rights, those rights are not inalienable rights, but they are rights that are the grants of the parliament.
Given, right.
And now we are saddled with that. You are 40 years later awakening to what you did not understand 40 years ago.
Right.
If that is understood, then we can proceed. You see, I mean, if the debate, if Mr. Peckford recognizes that, and Mr. Peckford recognizing that is also the Canadian people recognizing that. That is we, the people, you and I and all of us recognizing that, that for 40 years, we have gone along with this delusion, this yes. belief
yes.
that we have rights when we do not have those rights as inalienable rights. The Canadian people are not sovereign. The question then becomes, can the Canadian people become sovereign? Yes. And what must we do to become sovereign?
Well, and that is now the question. That is now the question. That's a great question, because even now, England, Britain has stated, that the Crown has stated that they're willing to give up their colonies, to give up their right to Commonwealth nations, and they're willing to accept sovereignty to the Commonwealth nations such as Canada. So it seems to me that now is the opportunity to do that and to break away and become independent, become sovereign, and create a constitution for the people.
Well, I don't know what, Mark, you're referring to, that the British Crown has agreed to give up, to give sovereignty. I don't know of any such declaration or documents. Look, the example is clearly staring in our face. In 1927, after the Balfour Declaration, this Balfour Declaration must not be confused with the Balfour Declaration that was made in 1917 in reference to Palestine and a homeland for the Jews. That's a different Balfour Declaration. The Balfour Declaration that we're talking about in constitutional term is one dealing with the dominions. And that is a 1927 declaration in which Sir Arthur Balfour, on behalf of his government, pointed out that all the colonies, the parliaments of all the colonies, and the colonies listed are Canada, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, and Ireland, Ayr. The legislatures of all these colonies would be henceforth treated as equal to the mother of parliament and as autonomous and independent. And then in 1931, the British government passed the Statute of Westminster, 1931, formalizing the Declaration of 1927. So in effect, if Canada wanted it, that is, if the premiers and the prime minister agreed, then we would have become an independent and autonomous country within the British Commonwealth in 1931 at the latest, and then not wait for 50 years. Because what happened between 1931 and 1982, that is 50 plus years, what happened was the crown jewel of the British Empire, India, became independent. And India became republic. India drafted its own constitution and declared itself to be a republic, not a constitutional monarchy, with its own, you know, Bill of Rights within the constitution. So India is 50 years ahead of Canada, whereas Canada was a dominion and India was a colony. And in 1947, India, on becoming independent, subsequently ratified its own constitution, which is a republican constitution. The head of India is the president of India, not the queen or king of England. Whereas in Canada, right, the head of Canada is the queen and now the king of England. So there is a difference over here. Again, speaking constitutionally, India is a republican country with its own constitution, with its own Bill of Rights, and India is a Commonwealth country. So what happened in the case of Canada is its own peculiar history of Canada. And I think, you know, I mean, again, talking in historical term, the reason we are a peculiar country in terms of our constitutional development and where we have arrived is because of this two characteristic right from 1759. The famous statement of Lord Durham in 1838-39 was that he found, Lord Durham came as the viceroy of Canada, but then he went back to England, that he found two warring nations within the bosom of one state, the two warring nations being French and English. And so everything in terms before 1867 and then everything after 1867 has been to find the balance between English and French, even though the French are a minority within Canada, yet in terms of the Federation, you know, equality and so on, the French rights and the English right, and to find that common ground, you know, and that has been our struggle, you know, on some of the major issues over the last 150 years. And as recently as the 1980 referendum in Quebec that triggered the Patriation Act.
Right.
You see, in 1980 referendum, let's now do a counterfactual discussion.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1980 referendum, if Quebec had voted for sovereignty association, what would have happened? There would have been a negotiation between Quebec City on with the result of the referendum, in which the majority of the Quebec people had voted for and decided that they want to be a sovereign country, a separate country. So there would have been a negotiation between Ottawa and Quebec City on the terms of the separation, you know, and how that would have ended, whether it would have ended in some sort of a peaceful relationship, or it would have ended with acrimony and possibly some violence. We don't know. We will never know. But we do know, or we can make that, you know, legitimate estimate that there would have been a negotiation and some sort of a separation and association would have been the end result, that Quebec would have become a sovereign country, right, and association would be a common, you know, economic, trade, commerce relationship because of the geographical situation of Quebec within the larger Canada. So that is something, if you keep in mind, that if that sovereignty association referendum had succeeded, we would be in a different situation now. And that different situation would be that the nine other provinces and their territories would then have to decide how quickly they can come together to patriate the Constitution.
Mm.
That is the Act of 1867. And let's assume that they agreed that they would come together very quickly and they would find the amending formula, something similar to what was ultimately agreed upon, 50% of the population or 70% of the population agreeing to how they will go proceed on amending the 1867 Act, then the British would have handed over the Constitution to us. And then, I'm carrying on this argument, nobody would have raised the question, because Quebec is now separated, English Canada possibly would not have raised the question whether we should have a Charter of Rights or not. We would be happy to just get the Constitution and then go on living as we had been living for the past 100 years under the laws of 1867. Those are common laws, and the question of freedom, which is what we're talking about, would be one in which it would be the people voting for a government in Saskatchewan, voting for a provincial government that respects the freedom of the Saskatchewan people. Albertans doing the same thing, British Columbian doing the same thing, Ontario doing the same thing, and the government of Canada, the federal government of Canada, minus Quebec. Now we have, Canada is no longer a bilingual country. Canada is no longer a bicultural country. Canada is a cohesive English-speaking country. And the government of Canada would be one that would have to respect whatever freedom the people of Canada wants. And if they don't respect that, then they would be defeated. And so we would have a different situation. But what we have now is a mixed bag of a codified charter,
right,
and the common law agreements of 1867. And the codified charter is within, in some ways, the framework of 1867, where there's no reference to the people. And so the sovereignty belongs to the parliament.
So what, Salim, what is the path to the people of Canada gaining back their sovereignty from Britain, independence, and creating a constitution for we the people? What's the path to achieve that?
Well, let me clarify. In my reading of the situation, Britain has no role anymore in this. We are separate now from Britain.
Okay.
In fact, the question going forward,
we're not the only ones having this conversation either.
Who?
New Zealand, Australia, a number
I mean, each in their own separate jurisdiction. Exactly, each in their own separate jurisdiction. Well, the Australians have been for the longest time arguing among themselves whether they should remain a constitutional monarchy and not become a republic. You see, so I mean that question is open to us too. We as a people can call for a referendum in any jurisdiction and say, do you want to remain a monarchy or become a republic? You know, nothing is stopping us, because the question of calling a referendum is within the jurisdiction of the provincial government, just as Quebec called two referendums. They called a referendum in 1980, and then they called a referendum in 1995. So the governments can call a referendum. It is now the Independence Party of Alberta. They, on their platform, they will call a referendum. So they can call a referendum, you know.
Buffalo Party has that as well.
Exactly. So those referendums can be called. But will it be binding? That will depend upon the government, because in the existing framework of the Constitution, the people are not sovereign to impose something on the government. It is the other way around. It is the government that imposes the thing on the people.
And then we get into the Clarity Act.
Well, the Clarity Act is there as a result of the Quebec referendums,
yes,
right? And that clarified it, that if you're going to separate, if the referendum is about separation from the Federation, then it cannot be, the numbers cannot be in 50 plus one. It has to be a substantive number, something like 60-40, you know. Mm-hmm. So that clarified the position, because in the 1995 referendum, the yes side, that is Parti Québécois and Jacques Parizeau, they lost the vote by barely 30,000. You know, if they had 30,000 plus one, they would have won the vote. That means they would have had a 50 plus one, and they would have claimed that, you know, they can go ahead and separate. And that's why the Clarity Act, the government of Jean Chrétien, approach the Supreme Court to provide a clarity on this matter. And that's the Clarity Act that subsequently was passed. But we come back. The hard question, the nitty-gritty question, where the rubber hits the road after 2022 is, can the Canadian people be sovereign? And with that sovereignty, then the existing Charter of Rights and Freedom becomes the document of the people, not of the government. Mm. That's the question. And that means we, the people, have to organize ourselves to force our government, that is at the provincial level and then at the federal level, to bring about the necessary change in which we Canadian becomes a sovereign people. At the moment,
constitutional reform.
Yeah, if you get what I've been trying to get across, the key question is, we the people, are we sovereign or are we not sovereign?
Right.
And Mr. Peckford did not recognize that.
Right.
And I believe, and this is something which we need to talk about, write about, and get the opinions of other people, more informed, better trained than I am. You know, I'm just one voice. I assume there are many more people with far more credibility than you and I who have to come into this discussion, including Mr. Peckford, and see what is the remedy to this situation. We have now a problem. We have to find the remedy. Okay,
Salim, I just want you to read what's on the screen there.
What is it? Yeah, exactly. I mean, the way it is phrased, what you're referring to is the 1867 Act. Yeah, we are under the 1867 Act. The 1867 Act was granted to us by the British government.
Mm.
We, in fact, requested the British government to prepare the BNA Act and give it to us. And that is what was done. And we remain. And if we had only patriated...
So we're incorporated under that act.
As a dominion. Yes, right. Okay. That's right, because that is clearly spelled out. I mean, right here. I mean, I have the Constitution in my hand. If anybody who's following this discussion can pull up their own Constitution, you can read it. It's right there, the Constitution Act 1867, and it begins by laying out, the very opening sentence is, an act for the Union of Canada, Nova Scotia, and New Brunswick, and the government thereof, and for the purposes connected therewith. And then it goes on to describe. It doesn't begin with, we the people. Are writing this document for ourselves and so on and so forth. I mean, here it is. The American Constitution of 1787, ratified in 1789, begins with the opening sentence word, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America.
Right.
They wrote this Constitution for their people. That is, the people's representative wrote the Constitution for the people. And by that act, if I want to be a little dramatic, they took the axe and they chopped down the trunk of the tree called British North America that was running the 13 colonies.
Right.
In fact, the founding fathers of the United States of America were engaged from before 1776 and after 1776 to get the British North American colonies north of St. Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
to join them because we were all the same family. Right. It was British North America.
Yes.
You know, the 1750.
We should have at that time.
Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely clear. I mean, yes. What happened was, I mean, what you made me read out and what the people are, I believe, circulating, that we are still a crown, a part of the crown, we were incorporated. All of that is technically true. But Britain don't want, it is like this. I am claiming that my father is you, whoever the you is. You are my father. And the father is saying, or the mother is saying, well, God damn you, you're 50 years old, go live your life, you know, leave me alone. I don't want to be your father anymore. Right. I've been your father long enough. Mm. But it is we, at the age of 156, 57, we are still stuck to that father who doesn't want us.
100%.
So yes, the British incorporated us because at that time, we requested the British to do that for us. Mm. And they did that. But we are still hanging there, holding their tail, you see?
We got to cut it off.
But there comes the history of Canada. We are a country that was designed and built in terms of constitutional arrangement, that is the corporation, by the Empire loyalists.
As a dependent.
Exactly. And even though their numbers are now minuscule, their ideas, their values and their backroom manipulation still remain strong and firm. You see, when we talk about Laurentian elites, when we talk about, you know, our institutional arrangement, the people who run these institutions, our universities, our corporations, and therefore our legal system, they're all still bound up with the British system of the constitutional arrangement that is English in its origin. What the Americans did was they cut root and branch and they became a sovereign people.
Right.
And we haven't. So we have to find the remedy. In my view, the remedy itself is actually very simple. It is the will of the people and whether that will can be translated into action. For instance, Mr. Peckford has made a lot of statements about him being the author of the charter, about the patriation, about the amending formula, and so on and so forth. And then he has said in the same speech, let me read his passage from the speech. And then I will give you my view on that passage that he has said. He says, if I can quickly find it. Here it is. They are the main four principles of your Charter of Rights and Freedom. Now, if you've got a moment, the governments of Canada are trying to say that they can override those rights through Section 1. I want to tell them that I was there. Section 1 was to be only used in war, insurrection, or the threat or peril of the state. It wasn't to be used to try to combat a virus for which 99% recover and less than 1% fatality rate. That's not a threat to the state. Section 1 is being used illegally by the government of Canada.
And the provincial governments, yes.
The provincial governments are going along with the government of Canada, that is going along with the Constitution of Canada. And so he continues that Section 1 is not the same understanding that has been used that he has. He has said that it was for a very specific issue. And he doesn't address in this speech Section 33. So here is my view on this matter. I would say to Brant Peckford. Mr. Peckford, whatever was your understanding on that night of November 1981, when you drew up the Charter of Rights and Freedom and you wrote in the Section 1, whatever was your understanding and the understanding of people around you, you didn't put those understanding in black and white on a paper.
Right.
And consequently, your understanding has no legal weight anymore because it is now simply your personal opinion. It was not written down. It was not signed on. So what you have now, Mr. Peckford, is, and I'm reading from the Constitution Act of 1982, you have the opening statement, which is a preamble, and where you say, whereas Canada is founded upon principles that recognize the supremacy of God and the rule of law. And then you proceed to Section 1, in which it is stated, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedom guarantees the rights and freedoms set out in it, subject only to such reasonable limits prescribed by law as can be demonstrably justified in a free and democratic society. And then you list Section 2, Section 6, Section 7 to 15 as the main rights and freedoms of the Canadian people. Now, here is the problem, Mr. Peckford. In your preamble, you refer to the supremacy of God and then the rule of law. But that's a preamble. How do you bring that preamble into being applied, the foundation upon which the rest of the Charter of Rights and Freedom is based upon? For instance, the supremacy of law. What do you mean by supremacy of law? Supremacy of God. What do you mean by supremacy of God? Who's God? We are, every day of our life since 1982, been violating the supremacy of God.
Right.
By doing things that God has forbidden.
Right.
If it is the supremacy of God, and if it is the Abrahamic God, not the God of the Hindus or the God of the Buddhists or the God of any other people, with all due respect to them, this is Canada, and you're talking about the supremacy of God, and if it is the Christian God, then God's will, God's command is clearly laid down. That's the Ten Commandments. Mm. And we have been violating that Ten Commandments almost every day of our life.
Right.
The Parliament of Canada, the Prime Minister of Canada, the ministers in the cabinet, and so on and so forth. Mm. So where is the supremacy of God? What is the meaning behind it?
Right.
And then you say the rule of law. Whose law?
Right.
Whose law? Who is the sovereign up here on whose law the rest of the Charter of Rights and Freedom is based? You have left it, you know, unqualified. You have not made it precise. Why did you do that, Mr. Prime Minister, Mr. Premier, Mr. Peckford? You were writing the Constitution not for yourself. This charter was not being written for yourself and your members, that is the first ministers, 11 people. This Constitution was being written for the people of Canada. Beyond you, beyond your life, if the Constitution has any meaning as a foundational law of a country, it has to go intergenerational for years to come. So how is it that you did not define any of these things? How did you leave it alone? Right. And I will answer you, Mr. Peckford, why you did not define them. Because you were operating under the framework and the tradition and the history of the British constitutional system, in which The parliament is supreme because the British constitutional system does not call upon the people.
Right.
It is the parliament that is supreme. And the parliament can do and undo whatever it wants. There is no divine right of king or queen in the parliament, because that was settled by the revolution of 1648 when Charles I was beheaded. Charles I was insisting that as the king of England, he has the divine right to rule.
Mm.
And the parliament chopped his head off.
Right.
And then half a century later, in 1689, the same parliament turned around and brought back from within his family, or rather gave the crown to his family, Charles II. And then when Charles II died, brought William of Orange and Charles II's daughter, Anne, who was married to William of Orange, from Holland to become the King and Queen of England.
Right.
So it is the act of Parliament, Mr. Peckford. You forgot that, or you were operating under that formula. And as a result, we are stuck with a Charter of Rights and Freedom in the manner in which you wrote it, despite all your protestation. And I am very sympathetic. All of us Canadians are very sympathetic to your protestation that you did with the Freedom Convoy. But that protestation has no substance, because the Supreme Court of Canada, the judges of the Supreme Court of Canada, has already ruled that the Charter of Rights and Freedom is not absolute. And that definition of not absolute is because of Section 1 and Section 33.
Right.
So now we have identified the problem. Mm. So now the question is, what is the remedy? I would recommend the remedy is not very, very complex. This is not so complex that we, the people, that is the truckers who went to Ottawa, cannot understand. It is very simple. But it will take a lot of pressure from we the people upon our institution to accept our position. But let me first give the remedy. The remedy is very simple. You, Mr. Peckford, wrote the preamble. Whereas Canada is founded upon principles that recognize the supremacy of God and the rule of law, to which we need to add only seven words. And those seven words are, whereas Canada is founded upon the principles that recognize the supremacy of God and the rule of law, derived from the will of the people, period. Add those seven words in that opening sentence.
Yes.
You have brought the people right into next to the supremacy of God and the rule of law derived from the will of the people. Full stop. Then the next step, that is the preamble, that's analogous to the American Constitution, we the people. So derived from the will of the people. And the next step, we revoke sections 1.
Yes.
And then we revoke Section 33.
Yes.
And we don't have to reinvent the wheel. You brought us the Constitution. We, the people, put ourselves in the Constitution, and we revoke Section 1 and Section 33. And from now on, it has to be the will of the people that will define what is our Charter of Rights and Freedom, that you, Mr. Justin Trudeau, you, the Chief Justice, Richard Wagner, you, the Premier, Scott Moore and Doug Ford, and so on and so forth, cannot touch. Because if you touch it, we will go after you.
Hear, hear. Beautiful. I think that's a good place for us to end for tonight, Salim. But I want to continue this on again next week when we meet again. Incredibly important discussion that we need to push forward. We need to educate people. We need to inspire people. Because this, to me, is the answer. This is the answer.
Yeah, so we document it. We, the people, come together and we insist that in the next election, or whenever the next election is, I mean, hypothetically, in the next election, we will only vote for those people into the parliament who stand by our demand.
Yes.
On this fundamental issue. They signed this declaration that we are putting forward.
Mm.
We will only vote for those people. And when they are in the legislature and when they are in the parliament, then they move the motion for calling a first minister's conference.
Yes.
And then they enact our declaration. Then they call a referendum to support, to see the support for this. I bet an overwhelming majority of Canadians are going to vote for our amendment. And then that becomes our constitution.
Can you write that up for next week?
No, but I have laid out the principle. And yeah, I mean, I will write something up. But I don't know whether for next week. But, you know, yeah. this is going to be an ongoing thing. This conversation has to take place at all level, at every town square, at every jurisdiction, because this is the process. As I said, what we are talking about tonight, I don't think more than maybe 10 or 15% of the people, Canadian people, understand. You see, the mask has fallen, but the expectation is still there that we have been betrayed. We have been betrayed because here is the Charter of Rights, and here is Mr. Justin Trudeau invoking the Emergencies 100%. Act. But the Emergencies Act will be defended by the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court will say, yes, the former Chief Justice of Canada, Beverly McLaughlin, wrote, and it's in my file, so I'll have to dig out the file. She wrote during the Freedom Convoy situation last year that the demands of the Freedom Convoy on the Charter of Rights and Freedom, those demands cannot be absolute. In Canada, we do not have that absolute. And she was referring to Section 1 and Section 33. So by removing Section 1 and 33, then there's no qualification. Our demand is plain and simple and straightforward. This is our Charter of Rights, and it is not open to interpretation by the justices.
Yes, this is what we need to do, my friend.
And for that, we have to work, and people have to come together.
Yes.
I think that can become a PPC agenda. It can become Party agenda. It can become a, you know, Independence Party in Alberta's agenda. All of these parties, all of the people behind, if they simply sign up on a declaration of what, you know, we are talking about and run it across the country, except for Quebec, we will have all the support.
Yes.
Even maybe some in Quebec, but Quebec is the spanner in the wheel, because Quebec has not signed the Constitution Act.
Right.
So it is basically the nine provinces, you know. And if you get the nine provinces, the people of the nine provinces and the three territories together, we don't have to wait next 50 years. We can do it between now and the next election.
Wonderful. All right, my friend.
Thank you sir.
Very much. That this was extremely inspiring to me. We need this. We need to do this.
Yeah, we need to do this. This would be our contribution. This would be us taking back our constitution.
Yes.
And we go forward. That's a beautiful thing. Okay. Good night, my friend.
All right, my friend. Take care.
See you. Thank you.
Well, I can't tell you how much I love and appreciate that man. Interesting, this conversation could be the beginning of something very big. I can't see a lot of people not accepting this declaration that Salim was talking about. giving and taking back our sovereignty as a nation and as a people, and developing a constitution for the people. It's pretty awesome. All right, so that is a wrap. I'm sort of in this weird space. Tomorrow I'm supposed to be going to the Christine Anderson event that starts at 5. So I have to leave here at 11 if I do go. But we also have a protest tomorrow at the Shaw Center. So I'm struggling. I'm trying to figure out where to be in two places at the same time. But we'll see how that goes. We do have that. It's very important, the protest at the Shaw Center. If you're in Saskatoon or area, please be there. Again, this is to protect women's and girls' rights to safety and security, because the policy in and of itself creates a dangerous environment, putting our women and girls in a very vulnerable spot. Not because we think trans are, you know, the predators necessarily. In some cases they are. But the predators take advantage of this policy and gain access to women and girls in a vulnerable situation in public change rooms. So we need to get that policy changed. And by the way, it's been confirmed. I will be speaking to City Council on March 8th, which is International Women's Day. So that's kind of cool how that worked out. And that's happening at 9:30 at City Hall. So if you're in Saskatoon, I would love to see a bunch of people show up there at the same time, whether it's outside or inside or whatever. It would be great to have a bunch of support there while I do that. Again, March 8th at 9:30 a.m. at City Hall. So that would be good. We're getting decent turnouts at the Shaw. Yeah, we're getting decent turnouts. Last week I didn't go. I was a little under the weather. But they had a good turnout. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with tomorrow. I'll let Donna Todd know. I think Donna's going again tomorrow. Anyways, that's a wrap. This was a very good discussion with Salim. Hopefully it catches fire. We're gonna continue this conversation next week as well. So stay tuned for that. All right. Anyway, that's a wrap. Remember, globalism bad, nationalism good. All right. Ciao for now.